or by calling the King Solomon Grand Lodge at 202-378-3843. WPFW, our organizational partners and dedicated listeners, continue to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county. From another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd
I do?
Okay,
turn around.
Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What?
Come on. Get that.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. This is our favorite time on Tuesday mornings to come to you. Crossroads is heard around the world and brought to you by the Pacifica Radio Network. I want to thank you for tuning in. We've been here for some time right now, but this morning we have, again, another interesting topic. We've been doing so many heavy topics, we decided to lighten it up a little bit. And we periodically do what's called going down memory lane. We talk about DC, what's going on, what's happening, and et cetera. And two of our regular panelists have passed on, Steve Fuss Bolton and Dr. Sandra Butler Truesdale. We've lost both of them, and they've been with us for the past few years doing our memory lane. So we decided to go ahead with it with Kenny Barnes, and we invited another guest to join us, Miss Denise Barnes, the editor and publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper. But before we get to that, we always open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey, last week we announced that Richard Dick Smith, the gentleman who produced the jazz show every Friday down at Westminster Presbyterian Church on Southwest, has been in a hospital. And Dick used to play for the Redskins, and he reminded me that last week they retired Darryl Green's number 28 jersey. Dick Smith wore 28 back in Charlie Taylor and Bobby Mitchell's days, and he's in a hospital, and he's a former Redskin, now commander. So, folks, please send your prayers and blessings to Richard Dick Smith. Every Friday, he had a jazz show down there for 25 years, and PFW is a jazz and justice show. And a lot of performers and jazz musicians who performed at Westminster were announced on this show on WPFW. So for all the folks who have attended the jazz event down at Westminster, please call or go back or send a word to Richard Dick Smith. He's at the Carriage Hill Nursing Home, in Bethesda. Richard Dick Smith, thank you, man. And we have prayers go out to you, Dick. Also, we start off with Pope Francis and advocates add pleas for Biden to clear federal death row. Pope encourages prayers for people with death sentences as pressure grows for Biden to act before Trump take office. Pope Francis has called for commutations for people on death row in the U.S. As religious leaders, civil rights groups, and current and former prosecutors urge Joe Biden to take executive action on capital punishment. In his Sunday prayer, Pope Francis, who has been a vocal death penalty opponent, said, "It comes to my heart to ask all of you to pray for the prisoners in the United States who are on death row. Let's pray that their sentence will be commuted or changed." Ah, boy, that's something. There are 40 men currently on federal death row. 38% of them are black, although black people comprise 14% of the U.S. population. Nearly one in four of the men were 21 or younger at the time of the crime. And 43% of them come from only three states, Missouri, Texas, and Virginia. Experts say Biden has a constitutional right to issue preemptive pardons. As President Joe Biden weighs whether to issue preemptive pardons to people President-elect Donald Trump has vowed to seek retribution against and even prosecute, experts say he has the power to do so under the Constitution. In his first network TV interview since his presidential victory, Trump vowed to use the first day of his second Oval Office term to pardon people convicted for their roles in the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Buildings in Washington by a pro-Trump mob even considering clemency for more than 900 people who have pleaded guilty. He also said members of the House Select Committee investigating January 6, namely co-chairs Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat of Michigan, and Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming, should be punished. There's an estimated 5 million children in the United States who have one or more parents in prison. 4%. The United States is home to 4% of the world population. And yet, the United States is home to nearly 16% of all incarcerated people in the world. Federal Bureau of Prisons closing prisons ahead of Trump presidency. The Federal Bureau of Prisons announced a surprise move to close 6 federal prison camps and permanently close FCI Dublin in California. FCI Dublin, a troubled women's prison in California that earned the name Rape Club after the warden, chaplain, and several staff members were found guilty of several crimes for inappropriate relationships with the female prisoners. The move caught everyone in the BOP off guard. Oh, my goodness, should have closed some more of them. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. Good morning, Denise Rolock Barnes.
Good morning, Rose Brown. How are you?
And good morning to you. And good morning, Kenny Brown.
How you doing, sir?
And how you doing? And we got Nikichi Taifa, our co-host. Good morning, Nikichi.
Good morning, Roach. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, Denise. It's been too long. It's been too long.
It's been too long. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, as we said.
Voice, I see your face, but never in person.
Who is that?
As we said at the top of the show, we normally do this every few months, going down memory lane to check on the climate in Washington, D.C., what's changed, what's happening, where we're going, and the impact of gentrification has had on this particular city. And as all local Washingtonians that we have on the program this morning, there's nowhere for us to go in Washington, D.C. My wife and I ride Denise on the weekend to go look for some place to eat. We got to go to Maryland or Virginia. There are no black restaurants or very few black restaurants. In fact, the most famous black restaurant is just the owner, Butch Wilson of Wilson's Grill on Florida Avenue. The Florida Avenue Grill passed away last week. And they've been in business for 70 years. And every city with a big black population have an outstanding or well-known soul food restaurant. In New Orleans, it's called Dookie Chase. In New York, it's called Sylvia's. In California, Detroit, there are other well-known eating establishments. But the Wilson Florida Avenue Grill on 11th and Florida Avenue has been in business for 70 years, and we lost it. And now one of the co-founders had just passed on. So I just wanted to share that with you. Kenny, Denise, what do you think about what's going on in Washington, D.C.? This from both of you's perspective. We start off with Kenny, and then we go to you, Denise. What's going on in Washington? How has this city changed?
Okay. Good morning, everyone. It's funny that you mentioned Butch, because all of us were very close to the Wilson family. And I was telling my daughter that we have an absence of family-owned businesses in Washington, D.C. And I played a little game with her because she's much younger than me, just identifying family-owned businesses that are owned by minorities in Washington, D.C. Roach and I have had this discussion, Ms. Barnes, many a day about where we're going to get something to eat. And it seems like in our culture, we have a lack of families taking over the businesses of our ancestors. And that's a problem. That's really a problem. Gentrification has hurt us because I can't go on U Street, for instance, to get something to eat without getting a $50 ticket. Okay. Yeah. Nowhere to park. Yeah. Nowhere to park.
Yes.
Gentrification has brought about this culture where bicycles are more important than automobiles. I mean, seriously. Yeah. And that was that was done by a mayor who was very confused on who he was. And we're paying the price for that now. I live out in the Woodbridge area of DC, and we've had a turnover of about 20% of the houses in my neighborhood. None of them were advertised. None. No signs in the yard saying for sale. But all of a sudden, you wake up one day and there's a white family moving in. Okay? So we've gone to maybe 85% minority to now we're about 15%.
Yes. Go ahead, Denise. What's your take on this, Denise?
So, you know, I have mixed feelings. One, I definitely agree that as I ride through the city, I had breakfast with a friend of mine up at 11th and I'm not going to mention the name of the restaurant because it's not Black owned, but up on 11th Street, like 11th and Harvard or something like that. You know, the whole area has a new business district. But I had to pass Wilson's, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
And I had to pass the one when I think the family sort of had that split and one brother moved over to Georgia Avenue, which was I think you used to broadcast from there, didn't you, Roach?
In fact, we broadcast every Christmas for 12 years. We fed 1,000 people every Christmas day, and we broadcast from the Georgia Avenue, 7th and V.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
Fantastic location. You know, the service, food was good. You pick up a copy of the Washington Former, the Afro, you know, the papers were there. You know, so yeah, we don't have a lot of that anymore. And it's sad because, you know, someone called me the other day that came here from the Houston, Texas, no, Dallas, Black person. And she said, where's the Black Mall in DC? And I was like, Black Mall? You know, something I don't know. And so I just had to find a Black store, you know, for her, you know, where you can buy like women's clothes. So I sent her over to Ida's.
Right.
Yes, you know, boutique. I sent her over there. And so, you know, Washington Former, we're going to have our holiday little luncheon on Friday at Hens Quarter, which is a new Black-owned restaurant over in Southwest near the waterfront. Not the waterfront, but over behind Audi Field. It's owned by Thompson's Hospitality. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, we're peeking up in little places. There's Hill's Kitchen or Hill something on 8th Street. There are places around, you know, but you really have to look for them. And when Kenny's talking about, you know, legacy, one of the things, it took me a long time to try to figure out what was the Informer going to do for its 60th anniversary. And while 60 is significant, in a way, it's really not. You know, it's a long period of time, but it's still short. And I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. And finally, it hit me. And I said, we are going to have, of course, a party, but we're going to have a conversation with legacy-owned businesses in the District of Columbia.
Nice.
And so I have identified 8 Black-owned businesses that have been around 60 years or more.
Wow. Is that many?
They're more. They're more. Yes. But that's why we decided we're going to turn this into an annual event. But not only are these second generation, in one case, the fourth generation is about to take over.
Wow.
And, that's Lofton's.
Okay, yeah, the tailors, yes.
Shop. You know, yes. Cheryl's getting ready to retire. Her kids are coming in. That shop was opened by her grandfather.
Wow.
So we want to talk about legacy. We want to bring that to the forefront. And I'll say one more thing as it relates to, now, you know, I have millennial sons who ride bikes everywhere. They're happy. Bikes and Uber, that's all they do. You know, I want a car? No, I don't need a car. I'm good. I can ride bikes, scooters, and Uber. I'm like, okay, well, I can't. God, it was something I was going to say about, that's the point I was going to make. As I have gotten letters and received and met people, white people, who've moved into the city, who say to me how much they appreciate the Informer because they're trying to understand the history of the neighborhoods that they've moved into. You know, they know how DC feels about how DC folks feel about DC, you know, but they are they don't get that, you know, that institutional history. And so that's one of the things that they say they appreciate us for. And going back, one more thing, when it comes to the anniversary event, and I'll give you all more details on that later. But I was also trying to find a white owned business that's in its second or third generation that was patronized by Black folks.
Did you find any?
Well, they're not in DC anymore, but my sons brought it up. Chuck Levins.
You mean the music company?
The music store.
Store, yes.
And okay. They're in their third generation now. The grandson is running, or great grandson is running Chuck Levins. They got burned out during the 60s, you know, because they were at Chuck H. Northeast. But, you know, it seems like all the young artists and everybody, they still go there, you know, to and they do a lot of work to support DC schools and DC artists. And so I wanted that connection.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my take on it.
Rose. You know, we talked about legacy. You are part of a legacy. Your mother and father, Calvin Rolock and City Councilmember Willa Rennie Rolock, started United Black Funk, among a whole bunch of other things, and the Washington Informer. Right. And I just want to share this with you, Denise, that when I was away at the University of the Department of Corrections, the only thing that kept me informed of what was going on, it was news. And you'd be amazed how important your newspaper is, or news in general, because when they send you from D.C., our prisoners had to be sent to the federal system. So I wound up in Oklahoma. And on TV, they had Lawrence Welk. When you get transferred from D.C. to these other states, you lose contact with news and information. And your legacy from the Washington Informer, being in business over 60 years, it is vital to those men and women who have been sent all over the country to read what's going on. Because after 40 years, you don't know who's in the city council, what laws that were passed, what new rules that's in effect, you're lost. So your paper kept me and other folks abreast. So the legacy that you are continuing with the United Black Fund, the Washington Informer, I take my hat off to you. And this guy beside you, Kenny Browns, he got a legacy that's gone beyond all of us. This guy's, I call him, Denise, he's my Washington Informer and my Afro, because Kenny knows it all. Come on with it, Kenny Brown.
First of all, I'd like to comment on Ms. Barnes' performance as the MC of the Sala Annual Luncheon. You were fantastic, ma'am. I didn't get a chance to shake your hand after the luncheon, but you were fantastic. But you've really hit a nerve with me. I played a snare drum when I was in elementary school, and I got that drum from Levins. That's where I got it. My daughter was going to St. Anne's and decided she wanted to play the flute. I went right out in Wheaton because they were recommending Levins, and they were telling the kids, you can get a good secondhand instrument at Chuck Levins. Mr. Levin himself said to me, Mr. Brown, your daughter deserves better than a secondhand instrument. And he gave me a brand new flute at the same price he was charging for the secondhand instruments, and started her career of playing a flute. So, I mean, you're right on point with that. And I'm excited to hear that you're going to find businesses that are second and third generations in Washington, D.C. We can remember the U Street Corridor. When we had Lee's Florist, we still have them. We have Industrial Bank of Washington. I'll give you some Black history that Roach Brown is not going to say, because he's a humble person, believe it or not.
Is that right? I didn't know that, Kenny.
When the restaurant on Georgia Avenue that you referred to, Roach, transitioned from the Wilson family. There were four people sitting at the table during the negotiations. Roach Brown, John, Butch Wilson, and Kenny Brown.
I don't remember that, Kenny. I didn't take my medicine this morning, so my memory ain't working right.
You've been helping out in the restaurant when you came home from the university.
Yes, right.
Every day. Being a big help, introducing them to community people. And when they decided they wanted to transition that business, Butch called me, and I didn't know John at that time.
Yeah.
But you knew him very well. And the four of us sat down and talked about how that transition would take place.
You're right.
I will never forget that, sir. So even though you're a humble person, you are part of Black history in many, 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 many ways.
And okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me just hop in here for a minute. Denise and I go back a long way. We go back to junior high school.
Wow.
We're in college together. Kenny Brown, you know, your brother, I went to a Catholic high school, and I asked him to my senior prom, and he took me there. So we all go back a long way. Hey.
I didn't know that in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's okay. My voice is kind of hoarse right now. But what I want to say is that we talked about gentrification, but I want to just say something about pre-gentrification, pre-integration, in terms of segregation, because I remember being a native Washingtonian. I remember as a child asking my mother that I wanted to go to Glen Echo Amusement Park.
And I
never understood why she said, no, we could not go. Never did understand. But recently I saw a documentary called Ain't No Back to a Merry-Go-Round, which was about the desegregation of the Glen Echo Amusement Park out of D.C. in Maryland, that was led by Howard University students. And one of those students, I found out from the documentary, was the brother of my political mentor, Mario Bedelli. That his brother was, what was that? I think it was Lawrence, Reverend Lawrence Henry at the time. So all of these issues kind of intersect. So Ain't No Back to a Merry-Go-Round references, you can go to the back of a bus, but there ain't no back to a merry-go-round. You can't go back.
Yes, that's right.
But they were successful. And then those were the early days. I remember my mother always saying that the reason why she went to Woody's, which was in Lothrop all the time, because Hex Company, and Mertie, you can identify with this.
Yes.
Hex would not allow Black women to try on clothes.
Clothes,
in their dressing rooms. So
yes.
Those are just some little tidbits that should not be forgotten.
That's
about
right.
DC history. But one more thing, there's another documentary that just came out called Diminished Returns, which is basically about the racial wealth gap in DC and its consequences. And it was done by a sister named Sabia Prince. And we should be hearing a lot about that soon. It's called Diminished Returns. And again, it has all of our great DC iconic areas featured in it. So be on the look on that.
Yes.
That's it.
You know, if I can jump in for a minute too, on that note, you know, a couple years ago, we, right before COVID, we got a grant because we wanted to do a series of articles. Actually, we started a newsletter called Our House, DC, Keeping Homes Black Owned in Ward 7 and 8, because we knew that this was going to be, you know, where we are over here east of the river was going to be the new frontier. And so we wanted to look at this whole issue of you know, just what was happening with homes, you know. And so one of the things that we found is that in a lot of cases, we set ourselves up for the takeover, you know, because when we look at the fact that, you know, just historically, you know, now I know there are cases when we have protected our properties that folks have come in and taken them anyway. So we know taxes and different things like that happen, but, you know, estate planning, you know, maintaining property, people die, you know, kids don't pay the property taxes. I mean, it's a whole lot of other things that make it ripe for gentrification to happen. And so what we've done now, we're still doing a newsletter. We don't have a grant, but we're just doing it out of pocket. It's a digital newsletter called Our House DC. But, you know, we're looking to try to inform people through, you know, people like Taichi and other lawyers, you know, real estate folks who can really hone in. We got to almost beat ourselves over the head with what we can do to, if we want to keep these properties, because, you know, a lot of people are saying, why, you know, I can go get something cheaper someplace else. Now we're leaving the country. But we've set our, in some ways, we've kind of set ourselves up for this. And the developers and those people with money and the law on their side and public policy on their side have figured out how to take advantage of our
lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
Lack of knowledge
and also inaction, right? Because you may know something, like you say, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And some people just don't want to drink the water. I mean, you got to have, you know, you got to protect your deed. You got to have a will or some kind of estate plan. You got to do some things to make sure if you want to keep this in the family. And then you got to teach the kids, look, when I'm gone, this is what I want you to do. And this is how I'm going to help to make sure that it's your life insurance, you know, just different things that we can do to protect our properties and our land and our institutions, our businesses. You know, my daddy thought when he died, the Washington Informer was going to die, you know, and it almost did. It almost did. But
you kept it alive, young lady. I take my hat off to you. You've been pumping it.
Absolutely and completely.
The community helped to keep it alive. But we had to prove to them that, you know, there was some value in helping to keep the institution alive. You know, we're always like, such and such is gone. Yeah, but, you know, the memory's still there, and let's continue the work.
There you go.
Continue the work.
Yes.
You know, one of the things is that at the beginning of the show at Grapevine, we mentioned that there's 5 million kids who have at least one parent incarcerated, 5 million children who have a loved one or parent incarcerated. And these kids are without parents. And what you're talking about building out a legacy and taking care of the property, et cetera, we went to a party the other night, and Denise, I sat in the room and cried. It was one of the best parties I've ever seen in 50 years. Kenny, it was oldest but goodies. It was the juke joint. It was a blues alley. It was a birthday party, and everybody came dressed like it was a Super Bowl. Man, I just sit back and watch our people dressed like it was all. And the party was so fine and inspirational that we said that I've never been to a birthday party with over 300 people.
Where was it at, Roach?
It was at
VFW
on Suitland Road.
Yeah, I got you. I know that.
And
guy.
The gentleman who gave the party was Ralph Bruce and his wife. Man, every Ralph time they come, they put on a fashion show at their birthday party.
Yes.
And I just sat there and just smiled, watching our people parade and dress and strut that stuff. Yeah. It took me back 50 years back to the Turner's Arena days and Coco Club and all that kind of stuff. It took me back to all that. So I want to say that's been quite an event. And again, I wanted to say to Kenny and to Denise, what is it if that's changed that you wish was still here? If we look back now, because I know I missed Hot Shops, I missed the Little Taverns, and you mentioned Glen Echo. That was the first time, Kenny, I ran into racism and it knocked me out. I went to Glen Echo to ride the merry-go-round, me and my boy named Tojo. And they said, you can't come in. We said, why? Because we don't want you in. So we said, well, why? We didn't understand what was going on. They came out that booth, man, and beat our butts. So we had to run all the way. There's a trestle in Georgetown where the streetcars used to run. We had to run on this trestle. And as we were running, it was hollering, saying, get them. And the other white folks came out, and it was chasing us. We were saying, what did we do? Why are they after us? All we wanted to do was ride the merry-go-round. So I have a unique history with Glen Echo. And I'm glad that's not happening now. But what is it, Denise, Kenny, and Nikisha, that...
That must have been why I ended up in Marshall Hall.
This was before Marshall Hall, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I know. I remember that. But I mean, I just never. Actually, we do an annual African American Heritage Tour. So we did a tour of Montgomery County year before last.
Uh-huh.
And that's when they were having, they had the anniversary of that incident and showed the, you know, we had a conversation with the documentarian of the video that you're talking about,
Nikisha,
thank you. I'm trying to call you by your last name. So, you know, I don't really remember much about Glen Echo, but I do remember going to Marshall Hall. So,
What about Sparrows Beach and Carl's Beach? We had black beaches back in the day. We don't have a black beach in it. We went to Martha's Vineyard this summer, and they got a beach up there called, what is it called?
The Black
Inkwell.
And it's a black beach, and everybody gets up 7 in the morning to go to this beach for exercises, aerobic, everything. We don't have our black beach. You say Marshall Halls. We lost Turner's Arena. We lost everything. Faces. Everything that we used to go, because right now, me and my wife, we want to ride out. We're in our senior years, and you want to go out for dinner. There's nowhere to go. And when you do, you got to pay. You get a ticket for $100. I'm 1 mile over the speed limit. I got 2 speeding tickets, and the speed limit was 25, and I was 41 miles. They gave me a $100 ticket. Then if you don't pay it in a certain, that's another $100 a ticket. Then if you get 2 or 3 more, they take your car. Then you can't drive down there because they got all these little sticks in the street, them little white sticks. You don't know what's, then the bicycles coming. Now the scooters are coming. This is just too much jiggy-boogie for somebody my age. I mean, you can't put up with all this foolishness in this city. And man, I am really frustrated about what's going on in our home city. We're home and we're not home. We're home and we ain't got no place to go. This is WPFW Crossroads on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice.
One of the things. Oh, I'm sorry, Russ.
Go ahead.
One of the things I miss, but you know, this is a long time ago, Nikichi. But you know, the neighborhood movie theaters.
Yes.
Right. Oh, yes.
Get up in the morning. You go down to the movie. We go to the Kennedy because you know
the Sheridan, the Kennedy.
You go up there at
Tivoli.
11 o'clock in the morning, you stay there till 5 o'clock in the evening.
All day.
Watch movies. It was hot outside, you know. So
then if you did a speech, you went down to U Street to the
right.
The Lincoln, the Republic, and the Booger T.
Lincoln and all that.
Yeah. Every neighborhood had a theater. And that was a place where the kids could, you know, be safe and go and enjoy crazy, you know, those with Godzilla and all those different
movies. You're telling your age, lady.
Oh, well that's what we I first saw the black exploitation films. Yeah.
Right.
Hey, I mean, I'm just saying, because that's all that was out there. Yeah.
What else can I mean, we spent a lot of time. I like our new recreation director. I think she has a vision for the city. She's done some great things, I think, to improve the programming at the recreation centers around the city. Because that's the other place, you know. I mean, after school, I go straight to the to Keene Recreation Center. That's where I played sports. That's where I learned how to crochet, you know. I mean, doing all cooking classes and then the Tacoma Pool, Nikichi, you know, you up there first thing in the morning, last, you know, that's 1,000 kids in a swimming pool, you know. Half of it, it was so many, you couldn't swim. Which
Yes.
Walk all those places. And this other part was just a bit before our time, Denise. But I know Roach and Kenny probably remember Tina Rama's dance party over there, the Wook. Station.
No, I remember Wook. Yeah. I live right back away from Wook. My dad used to have a show on Wook. Petey Green was on Wook.
Right. That's right.
I used to come on, watch it on TV every day coming home from junior high school.
And WST. Both of those were, you know, like spots where you could go listen on the radio, and then also, you know, there were places inside, you know, where you could do things. You could have events.
You know, you've raised up a vital issue. Back in the day, we had the recreation centers was open in the evening. They had roving leaders. And these guys would go all around town to be mentors, providing direction and assistance. This is gone. And we keep talking about the crime rate increasing with our youth. With 5 million kids without a parent, and with the crime rate going up the way it is, and the closing the playgrounds, and they taking out trays out of the schools.
Yeah.
This created a community or an environment for crime to foster and exist. And a lot of things we were talking about kept us on location, kept us going forward, that kind of stuff. A lot of things that we had, they don't have right now. This is one of the reasons why we're doing the show, to talk about what used to be, what can be, and what we should do to try to help and save our community, and particularly our kids, because our kids are in dire need of help all across the board. And I used to think about it right now. I miss terribly the little tavern hamburgers. I ride through them old, them little streets, and you get a bag of hamburgers for a dollar. You get five hamburgers for a dollar. And they were so small and greasy, and grease run all down your arm, all down your wrist. You'd be licking your arm and your elbow because the grease is. I love little taverns, and I miss them so desperately.
I went to.
But you know, I also miss drive-in theaters, drive-in movies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's one goodness. Thing I remember with my dad. We did go to drive-in movies. He died when I was six, but I remember that.
Roach.
I was just going to. Oh, go ahead, Kenny.
I want to throw a name at you. Do you remember Shep Allen?
Yeah, Shep Allen from the Lincoln Theater.
Shep Allen was one of the best dressed Negroes you'd ever want to see. He came straight off of Wall Street. Well, Shep Allen was the general manager of the District Theaters.
Yes.
Wrote this name in the Booker T, Republic, and the Lincoln Theater.
Yeah.
Roach Brown and Kenny Brown had a methodology of going to all those theaters for free.
Yes, right.
We'll talk about it
we
now.
We don't do that.
And we took the whole neighborhood in with us. We went to the theater. One person get a quarter, and he opened up. He goes in and go on the side. And open up the side door. And the whole neighborhood come in for that one quarter. And we stayed there all day.
I'm glad there's a statute of limitations on that.
Yeah,
he might be back to the university, the Department of Corrections.
Yeah, I want to share with everybody, there's a photograph that is in several restaurants in Washington, D.C. It's the number 13. 90-pound basketball team.
Yeah.
Okay. Roach has spoken at many funerals of people who were on that picture. And we go down memory lane looking at who was on that photograph. But what number 13 Boys Club did, Ms. Bonds, we walked into the building, you had administrative office. You had to join. Your parents had to sign off on it. We had a library. Okay.
Yes.
If you were going to play a sport or box or whatever, you had to spend time in the library. There was no getting away from that. We had mentors who led many a young man through school, helped him get resources to go to college. I walked into one of our favorite eating places. We call it Daddy Grace's Cafeteria.
Yes.
That's still around.
That's the brand.
Somebody had the photograph. And as Roach will tell you, on a given Saturday, won't you say, Roach, there's 40, 50, 60 people there.
Yeah.
Yeah, first Saturday.
And get together. So I'm coming in to get my meal and get out quick. And this gentleman...
We lost your sound.
Your volume. We can't hear you, Kenny.
We lost your volume. Turn your mic up. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. And a gentleman said he's one of them. And they had the photograph, Roach. And sitting in the middle of the photograph is Roach Brown. And we talk about the journey we've taken because of the way those men mentored us. And one day we went to the Boys Club and it was a sign that said close. No warning, no anything. And I guarantee you, the juvenile crime went up.
Yes.
We closed those doors.
Yep. And one thing I would like to say is when you're speaking of culture, when you go to funerals, weddings, birthday parties with Black people, that's our culture. I mean, can't nobody outdress us, outswag us, everything. That is our culture when we come together for events.
Yeah.
We dress up like we're going to Sunday morning service.
There you go. You know,
one of the things I wanted to say, Rose, really quickly, because when you brought up, you know, what we don't have, one of my concerns, and I'm, you know, over here in Ward 8, you know, Baloo, when they rebuilt Baloo, they built a brand new, almost Olympic-sized swimming pool inside of the school.
Yeah.
It just opened to the public I think it was last year. So you figure that pool has been there for about 5 years.
Wow.
Still barely used. The swimming pool at Berry Farms. I've heard, you know, that that's one of the better swimming pools in the city.
Yeah.
The Berry Farm Recreation Center. White folks from across the bridge are the ones that are coming over to use that swimming pool.
Yeah.
They aren't using it. You know, also Ballou, they had a soccer field, built a brand new soccer field. Now, kids over here don't really play soccer because there were no soccer fields. Now we have one. Yeah. But fortunately, now in the evenings when I drive by, I see, you know, a couple hundred kids with, you know, coaches, which I'm really excited about because that's what you need.
Right.
Folks who are going to work with these, you know, with our kids, you know, and they the soccer field is full of kids playing football. That's fine. That's OK. As long as it's being used. We got baseball fields. Right. Folks coming in from Maryland to use our baseball fields. So we have, you know, we people have put investments into facilities. But we can't get people to use them.
Why?
And then, of course, you need coaches. You need funding. You know, people have teams. We got to support the teams. You know, it's the things that we used to do because we had to do it that we don't do anymore because we want somebody else to do it. In some cases, we want somebody else to do it. You know what I mean? But, you know, the Boys and Girls Clubs, those things, they were funded by by donations. That's what kept these doors open, you know. So when we talk about, you know, we get tired of these Giving Tuesday things and people out here trying to raise money. These are people that are trying to sustain programs, but they also need people to engage with those programs.
There you go.
How we get there, I don't know how we get back there, but we got to do a little bit more than
you know, what we're doing.
The glass half empty.
Yeah.
Really, we need some people pox instead of dog pox. There's too many of those.
You know, that's another thing. There's over 22 dog parks in Washington, D.C. I counted them, 22. But how many parks are for us, for black boys or black men, or for senior citizens who are black? We don't have the same thing. One of the things you mentioned, Denise, about the swimming pool and the soccer field, and we don't have the resources. Part of the thing is we don't have the men or the at the party we mentioned earlier, Saturday. I went around, there was 33 ladies sitting at the tables all by themselves. 33! You go to dinner out and you see 6, 8, 10 ladies in the crowd. There are no men for the 40, 50, 60-year-old females in that population. These are men who are still incarcerated. We're talking about the youngsters who go to jail, but what about them youngsters who grow old in jail and they come out, and it's sad to see all these women sitting at the table without an escort, without a date, without nothing. They go back home sad and lonely, and the men are locked up in prison, and the kids are being thrown into prison. So all this impacts on us. What's going on in our community impacts on public safety, on how we interact with each other, and it's sad. But I'm glad that we got folk like Denise and Kenny and Nikichi who's been here, who know what's happening. And I go back to the roving leader. The rec centers should be open every night. The churches should be open 5, 6 days a night in the evening. We're talking about saving lives and activity. And you got enough men. We've been meeting with a group called Let's All Get Involved. With
Time for Us to Get Involved.
It's called Time for Us to Get Involved. We've been meeting with Ben Ali, Kenny Barnes, some more folk, Tyrone Parker, and we've been meeting every week. In fact, when we get finished with this show, I got to go down to the Chili Bowl for a meeting to see what we could do to help stem or stop some of this stuff. And what we're talking about plays a big part. We all got to get involved for whatever reason you think, whatever you skill you can bring to the table. Folk, we're talking about saving lives. I've lost 5 people in my family to violence. Please, we need help. We can take our first caller. You're on the air, please. Question or comment? First caller.
Comment. This is Rick calling from Germany, man.
Where are you at? I told you about, you must have heard the lady mention about Berry Farms.
Yeah.
Denise, he left Berry Farms and went to Germany and ain't come back. Come on, Rick, you got this?
He'll have tears in his eyes when he comes back to see Berry Farms now.
That's right.
He won't even recognize it.
Come on, Rick.
Yeah.
I left Stanton Road. And before I left D.C., I was living over there in Trinidad, and it was Meg's place. So that was my last stomping grounds before I left. But I want to, is Denise Rolock Barnes still there?
Yes.
Yes.
I want to ask you, between Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and New York, how many black papers have survived? Do you know?
Yes, interesting question. That's a good question.
Yeah.
All of the ones that I know of, the only one that may not, well, I mean, survive since when now? Because, you know, back in the day, we had about 10 black newspapers in D.C. You know, News Dimension, Lenny DeCamps had a paper, Afro's still around. So Pittsburgh, most of the papers are still alive. Most of them are. Trying to think, the paper my dad used to work for on Florida Avenue, The Observer, the New Observer. Yeah. The Observer, the family opened the New Observer in Philadelphia. I don't think they're still around anymore, but all of them are still around. We're still here.
Will you be
Amsterdam expanding? News, Philadelphia, Tribune,
Pittsburgh Courier,
Washington Former, Afro, and there have been some new ones.
And the Capital Spotlight.
Capital Spotlight's gone. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of with Barry. And Barry left the Spotlight and started, what was this paper?
News Dimension.
Yeah, News Dimensions, exactly. Yeah. Right, News Dimensions. So. We're still here.
Let me ask you, how can you exist, Denise, printing a newspaper when everybody got internet, they got Google, they can stream, and they can communicate instantly? So what effect this had on your surviving with your newspaper, with all this new modern technology, AI?
I wasn't prepared to do a commercial, Roach. Probably I need to, you know, just talk about what I say. Wherever you are, we are.
Yeah.
So okay. If you're on social media, we're there. You can
Beautiful.
Find it. If you're on YouTube, look up you've been on the show, Let's Talk, on what we call Win TV, we're there. Yeah. Okay. You know, and that's one reason, even with I know there's a lot of and then we have, you know, our digital newsletters, we've got a website, you know, and all of those are provide opportunities to generate revenue. Mm-hmm. Do we make a lot of revenue off of those others? No. But, you know, we make a little something. So all that helps. The paper's still strong. You know, it's still strong. So thanks to people in the community who support us, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody really wants to see a black newspaper die. And a lot of these white newspapers that are dying across the country are looking at us. You read Editor and Publisher magazine and some others. They're trying to figure out how we're doing it. But I think the biggest thing that's been helpful to us is where this conversation first started is legacy.
Yeah.
Most of our publications are in our second or third generation. Many of us are women owned. And so, you know, I think that's now what happens post my era and the eras of those who are, the Amsterdam News is run by the daughter, you know, all up and down, all over country, you know, that's what's happening. So we don't know what's going to happen. That's what we're looking at now is how we transfer this, you know, to either the next generation or someone who really understands the power and legacy of the black press. So
what you just said lead me to, we lost two of our biggest publications, Jet and Ebony. And I look forward to seeing that, especially the Centerfold. They had some beautiful ladies in the Centerfold. And if you were in the university, that was the first page that you turned to.
I know.
No, that's right.
So what happened? What's the status with this Jet and Ebony? They were like major institutions in our community for a long time. Now they're no longer there. Nobody took the place of Jet and Ebony.
Well, Ebony's still here. It still exists, but it's only online, just like Black Enterprise.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can still read them, you can subscribe to them, but they're all online publications. You know, they're no longer print. So, you know, that's where they're making their money and sustaining themselves.
We have another caller, but Denise, I need you to make sure you share what you need to share with our audience before we sign off about your upcoming event.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll just say that quickly because we're still putting it together. But yeah, our event is gonna, our 60th anniversary legacy celebration will take place on March the 28th.
My mother's birthday.
So you'll come back on before then to share more.
Yeah. And at the Martin Luther King Library, you know, when the Washington Former first started, we were at 715 G Street Northwest.
That's right. I remember. Yeah. Down in Chinatown.
That's right. That's right. That was my playground. I knew everybody, black, white, Chinese, and other.
We'll take our next caller. You're on the air. Question or comment?
Yes. My name is James Fields, and I just came home from prison October 30th. So I haven't been home but just a little over a month.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I was me and my daughter was out one weekend, and we was just coming through town. I grew up in Northeast, up in that Carver Terrace neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And we was just looking at, she was showing me how things have changed in that town. And I hardly recognized it, you know.
That's right.
And I was listening to the radio this morning. I'm sitting here listening to it now. And they was talking about how things have changed as far as the neighborhood theaters and this, that, and the other. And we used to go in, we used to go to them theaters like at 12 noon and stay at about 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
You know, I mean the Beverly on 15th Street Northeast, where the people's drugstore was on the corner of 15th and Benning Road.
Yeah.
And we would save our money and go in there and sit at the fountain and get a piece of chocolate cake and a soda or a hot dog.
Yeah. That's right.
And I tell you something else, that what they was talking about this morning that I had heard nobody say, America on Wheels up Calorama Road.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
that's
man.
Right. The skating rink.
Yeah.
Right.
The skating rink, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they wasn't playing no music, no CDs. So they had the organ, the pipe organ up there. They played that thing live.
And yeah, like you was in church.
Yeah, and if you couldn't skate, please don't get on the floor out there when they hit trios. Don't get on the floor.
That's right. I loved watching.
Hey,
brother,
rolling.
How much time did you do? You said you just come home. How much time did you serve?
I did 42 years.
Woo, Jesus! Oh,
yeah, 42. Wow. I got locked up January 1982.
And you come home in October.
October 30th.
Do me a favor, man. Stay on the phone and give the engineer your phone number. So I need to talk to you, man. See what we can do to help you out, brother.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Okay, you just stay on the phone. Give your phone number to Mike, and he'll give it to us, and we'll touch base with you. See what we can do to help you out, man. Because I know if you did 42, brother, you need a lot of help, man.
I haven't even got to the out of pocket medical thing that I had to go through that I'm still going through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Thank you for calling in, man. And we'd like for you to give your name to that guy, and I'll call you when the show is over.
And welcome home.
Yes. And welcome home, man.
Oh, thank
my
you.
My goodness. You came. Did you have any help? Your family? Did you have any family left after 42 years?
Oh, yeah. All the time. My daughters and my sons and stuff. But, you know, everybody's grown now, you know.
Yeah.
I know my daughter, she was like 16 when I got locked up. My oldest son, he was 13. He's retired DC policeman now. He still does that CSI kind of stuff under another name, you know. But he retired. Yeah.
Glad you're home, sir.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here, man. We're glad to have you back, brother. Stay in touch and give him your information, and I'll see what we can do to help you out, partner.
All right.
Okay. And keep the count messed up, would you?
Yeah.
Okay. We're wrapping up, Kenny. We got a couple of minutes to go. One minute, though.
One. Yeah.
Our guest has been Kenny Brown, the fifth generation Washingtonian. We grew up together, and none other than the dynamic Denise Rolock Barnes, who's paying on a tremendous legacy on her shoulders with the Washington Former, United Black Fund. Lady, we are so proud of you, Denise. And I know your mother and father are smiling. How you kept this thing going. And to our co-host, Nikeisha. Are you still there, Nikeisha?
I'm always here, Roach. How you doing? Even when I'm not here, I'm here.
Thank all three of y'all. This has been, like I said, we've been doing a lot of heavy shows. We wanted to lighten it up some and talk about going down memory lane. And for all of you listening, please don't forget Richard Dick Smith, who used to play for the Redskins, who are now the Commanders. He wore 28 before Darrell Green wore. He's in a hospital, a nursing home. He's in Carriage Hill in Bethesda. Please call him and go by to see him, because Dick needs help. He's been doing the jazz night every Friday night at Westminster for 25 years. Okay, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next week. This has been Roach Brown and
Motine.
And we'll see you next week. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. Yes,
waking up, thanking God. Every day is feeling just like Sunday. Wifey fly by my side. Green light, everything is going my way. Riding clean, living dreams. Just left the barber and I'm feeling like Midas. Heard him say, give him praise. What's in the water got you acting like this? Ain't a day go by that I don't try to thank the Lord up above. And if you wonder why I'm loving life, come close and I tell you what's up.
On Saturday, December 14th, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m., WPFW and the King Solomon Grand Lodge host a winter coat and clothing drive. Donations of lightly used winter coats, hats, gloves, socks, and more can be dropped off at 2245 Rhode Island Avenue, Northeast. This is a one-day collection drive with distribution to those in need to occur on New Year's Day, beginning at 10 a.m. from the lodge. Additional information can be found online at wpfwfm.org or by calling the King Solomon Grand Lodge at 202-378-3843. WPFW, our organizational partners and dedicated listeners, continue to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
During our upcoming end-of-year pledge drive from December 15th through the 21st, WPFW offers you the gift of knowledge as we dedicate the week to Brothers of Culture and Resistance, Bill Lucy, Quincy Jones, and Amiri Baraka. On Monday, December 16th, we commemorate Bill Lucy and the Black Workers Movement. Wednesday, December 18th, it's From the Pen of Q, a Quincy Jones retrospective. We close with Baraka at 90 on Thursday, December 19th. Detailed schedule at wpfwfm.org. You can give the gift of knowledge anytime by texting WPFWFM to 801-801, helping us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. If you're already a cherished member of the WPFW Jazz and Justice Circle and your contributions this year have not reached $1,000, your membership will expire on New Year's Eve. To renew your membership or become a new member of the Jazz and Justice Circle through the end of 25, donations can be made during our year-end fund drive from December 15th through the 21st. Anytime before December 31st, Jazz and Justice Circle donations can be made several ways. By calling 202-588-9739 during the pledge drive. By visiting wpfwfm.org and clicking on the big red Donate Now button. Via Cash App at $WPFWFM or via text by simply texting WPFWFM to 80181 and following the clear and easy prompts.
Sanctions Kill, America's Without Sanctions, and WPFW commemorate International Human Rights Day Tuesday, December 10th, with a live special broadcast from 7 until 8:30 p.m. We will hear from ambassadors from Cuba and Nicaragua and the Deputy Foreign Minister of Venezuela discussing people-centered human rights in their countries. Palestinian activist Ayad Kishawi from the International People's Tribunal on U.S. Imperialism, Austin Cole of America's Zone of Peace Campaign, Dr. Samira Adri from Friends of Latin America, as well as Song from the Black Workers and Wellness Center Chorus. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
We're living proof and all's alert that we're two from the good black man, and we're a winner.
On Monday, December 16th at 9 a.m., Yuhuru Movement founder, Chairman Amala Yeshitela, known to some as Joseph Waller, along with two leaders of the movement's White Solidarity and Reparations component, Penny Hess and Jesse Neville. Component, Penny Hess and Jesse Neville will walk into the federal courthouse in Tampa to be sentenced for the crime of speaking out for reparations, justice, and peace.